This is Hacker Public Radio, episode 3676, for Monday, the 5th of September, 2022. Today's show is entitled HPR Community News for August 2022. It is part of the series HPR Community News. It is hosted by HPR volunteers Ron, Dave, Ken, and Monochromek, and is about 176 minutes long. It carries an explicit flag. The summary is, join us for this near 3-hour saga where HPR volunteers talk about shows released and comments posted in August 2022.
Hi everybody, my name is Ken Fallon and you're listening to another episode of Hacker Public Radio. This is the community news for August 2022. Joining me this evening is Dave.
Hello, Dave Morris from Edinburgh.
And Rowan.
Rowan from Baltimore.
And I'm calling in from the Netherlands. Community News is a monthly look at what's been going on in the HPR community. And it's a regular show scheduled for the first Monday of the month. Anyone can join, but we like people to have listened to all the episodes so we can give feedback on them. And as ever, Dave will introduce the new hosts.
Yes, we have two new hosts. Two. That's wonderful. We have Stash,
yes,
AF, who was a commenter for a bit, and I think we sort of hinted you could send us
subtly,
a show.
Subtly,
and,
yes.
And he's done that very thing. And we've got, I think, I'm not quite sure how he pronounced. I would just go for the simplest one, simplest pronunciation, Hypernike, is it?
Yes, that's what I used in the text-to-speech anyway.
Yep. Okay, well, if it's wrong, please let us know.
Right. I explained what we're doing here, and so let's go into it. First of all, we go through last month's show and see if there was any comments or observations. And the first show was the HPR Community News itself. And Mike Ray says, API, I would use the API if there was one. I have not published a show in years, despite having a lot of subjects to talk about. I posted the last one before the the FTP option went away. For some reason, I have an aversion to fighting with what I see as a complex number of steps necessary to publish a show, especially as I would never publish a show without complex notes. And I would enjoy writing a client for the API, possibly in Perl, since Perl is the best computer programming language ever invented, says Mike.
Yes, Mike. Yes, I. Well, what can I say?
Nail
on head being hit. Yeah.
And, can't see any dissenting opinions on this particular audience. But,
No. So Kevin O'Brien says, comment number two: high winds, and this is a comment about the fact that we discussed what it would be like to drive the RV that he was describing in high winds. We didn't have much problem with winds for two reasons. First, when you drive more slowly, there is less chance of wind to blow you around. Secondly, our truck is bigger than a pickup. It's a Freightliner sport chassis.
So those, it's like one of that you've got a driver's section in the front and you got a seat or a sleeping compartment behind. And then there's the hitch area. All right, pretty cool.
Yeah, it's still, I still feel it might be a bit wobbly in a strong wind, but maybe they're avoiding the winds, which is a good thing to do. Living in Scotland, crosswind is a thing.
Indeed. So the first real show of the month was Registered Memory, which is not to be confused with ECC memory, although memory modules often use both technologies, by JWP, who is making me realize how little I know about computer hardware since I stopped finding it interesting.
Yeah, same here. I'm getting some useful stuff from JWP here, and I didn't know any of it really. Just knew there was memory, that was it.
Yeah, I'm really loving all his trips back through these various like hardware issues and it just reminds me much how much I hate making hardware decisions because
yep.
they always seem to be wrong.
Yep, yeah,
absolutely.
The pain.
Hello, HPR, and this is from Stasha AF, long-time listener, first-time caller.
You have a great job.
Yeah.
Surprisingly, no comments.
he was very quick. He was you know in and out and you know whizzed through the corridors very fast. But good to have him on board.
Yeah, I think he took our comment and introduced yourself very literally. And now the next time he's passing through, he can come into the janitor's cafeteria and sit down, and we'll have a cup of coffee and ask some pertinent questions that we might be able to get more shows out of.
Yeah,
I was going to say, although maybe just getting in and giving that quick one is a good way to do it, because I still have a How I Got Into Tech episode percolating mm-hmm. somewhere on my hard drive that never actually got published.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of which, Stash AF is about to come up a bit later on with the How I Got Into Tech show. So there
see,
we go.
There, we tripped him up on the mop of doom there, just as he thought he was leaving the building. Dave threw the mop down and
the mop of doom. I like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
We need a drawing of it. We need a visual representation of that, I think.
Excellent. Excellent. I have had this idea of doing a show where I give a tour around HPR towers, you know, passing by the coffee corner and the janitor's closet, and up past the garage section where all the RVs are and the fold up bikes, and then at the back is the river where people are freshwater swimming, etc., etc. It'd be cool if somebody could do a script mm-hmm. for that. That would be, and then you know, cut in the people as you're walking past the door. You hear tattoo and various different people. That would be kind of awesome.
Also, sounds like an HPR text adventure.
Yes. Right there.
Yes.
Norrist, who has unwittingly, possibly as yet unaware that he has volunteered himself to take over the Free Culture Podcasts page. I don't know if we've broken that sad news to him as yet.
No,
anyway,
actually not.
Pretend you didn't hear that. Anyway, pretend you didn't hear that. Using the data of the OGG feed to create the website. And this is excellent. Insofar as I don't think you can recreate the website, but you can create everything else based on the RSS feed. And there are a few things in here that we were missing. Tags should definitely be included into the web page. But I think we've discussed that before, Dave. To put the structure that we have for the Internet Archive pages into the OGG feed, and indeed, Ron, for your HPR generation website in there also.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yep. He did sort of inspire me to do my episode too, since he's really been cranking out some nice episodes on this particular concept.
Yeah, it was a great idea actually. I thought it sounded very impressive what he'd done there as a challenge. It felt, I think he was going for there. So yeah, good for him.
Yeah, brilliant. And indeed, if there's stuff that we can add to the feed, we will do that to make it easier for people to slurp up our data, because that's what we're all about, sharing knowledge. So really cool. I really was chuffed. This is one of those that you're listening to and you go, did somebody just volunteer for HPR here? And the following day, we had BinRC with BSD for Linux users. And this was, in my personal opinion, a fantastic show, as it reminded me the enthusiasm I had for Linux when I came to Linux. And it had me wondering, should I maybe install a BSD distro, just, or BSD, not distro, it's not a distro, it's a
flavor.
Thank you, flavor, BSD flavor, to see, just to see.
Yeah, I've always, I've like, I'm sort of the same. Like, I've read about them a lot. I remember when Dragonfly BSD was first introduced. I just never, like, got around to either loading it on the hardware or trying it in a VM.
Mm-hmm. I have a slight reluctance, which is not justified at all, but just because I spent a few years using the original BSD versions back in the day, and some of those Unix versions were really clunky. But then so were some of the non-BSDs. So we had a System 5, was it? What was it called? The one that ran on HP's, HP UX. That's a very strange beast. That was a really, really unusable version of Unix, I found. It never did, you know, if you wanted to delete something, you had to do Control H, but only when there was a following wind, you know. It was better just to delete the whole damn line and then type it in again. Those sorts of things. Nobody seemed to know how to fix that. Really, I should actually have a go at this. I see that Claudio is running a BSD variant on one of these little triple EPCs. So maybe that's a thing I should do.
Have
to get the flavor.
Go do. He also commented. So.
Oh, shall I do his
yeah,
comment?
Yeah, please. Then?
Yeah. Claudio M says, excellent breakdown of BSD. Great coverage of BSD and its descendants. Thoroughly enjoyed it. Well done. I had a different comment planned, which went a bit long. I too tend to ramble a bit, lol. So, as Ken advises, I've decided to make a personal response to this show, which I'll upload soon. I'm overdue for a show anyway. Smiley face.
Yes! Yes! Do you want to take the next one, Ron?
Sure. The next comment is by Norris. Why use OpenBSD and FreeBSD? My favorite BSD is OpenBSD for all the reasons you described. I use OpenBSD in my home router because of the project's focus on security. I also have a ThinkPad, mostly runs Linux, but I also have a dual boot OpenBSD current. I use FreeBSD on my home server for jails, managed with Locage and ZFS.
Cool. And Phoenix says, suggestion. Great video. It would be amazing if you create a C programming series. What?
Well, I liked your show, so do shows on other stuff, please. fair enough.
Was there a video with this?
No.
Did you just let a spam comment through?
I don't know. Maybe.
Phoenix, you need to record a show now, even if you are a spammer. Because how you managed to get through our anti-spam selection.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. It was asleep that day, I think. Yes. But I find that people call videos podcasts and podcasts videos in various contexts. Mm. But so I didn't pay a great heed to that, honestly.
Yeah, anyway. That's true. I think you did mention C programming during the episode.
Mm-hmm. Kevin O'Brien says, I think it's my turn, isn't it?
Yeah, go for
it. He says, I love the show. Fantastic show and great show notes. I hope we get more from you.
Yes, good show notes, actually.
Yeah, absolutely. Some excellent stuff.
And Norris, with a lovely little show about the importance of small toy projects. And this one was inspired by the Haskell show, HPR 355A's, How I'm Learning Haskell by Tukador.to, if I'm not mistaken. Just do something, small project, nothing big.
Yeah,
and for that, he did lovely, there's a lovely image where they've got the various different takes. This is where he takes freeculturepodcast.org feed, and well, not feed, but list, and uses it, and then puts the figures out how recent they've been doing the shows, and then if they're doing okay, a little behind or pod faded, And that would be an excellent one for that site. That site needs a lot of love and attention, actually, and stuff like this would be very good for it.
Yep. I wrote a script to do some of this, but it's not had any attention for, I don't know, a couple of years or something. So, the whole project does need some TLC, I think.
Yeah, it was brought up fairly fast to do the FOSDEM thing, and it's a good idea. It's just some TLC is no harm. And Ron, do you want to do the comment?
Sure. Let me scroll down there real quick. So, let's see. Posted by some guy on the internet. Love this show. I love this type of content. The ability to create from thin air whatever you want, even if it's not exactly in demand. It always feels like I'm listening to a mage crafting new magical items just because of the other one was out of reach.
Perfect.
Nicely said.
Okay. And from the man himself, small-time sysadmin, how some guy on the internet maintains their Linux box, part one. I always like to see that too on the show, part one. And this was about backing up and stuff. Not how I would do it, but then again, how I'm doing it so infrequently, you'll have the last laugh. But I really enjoy the way he... Go ahead, over.
Oh, sorry, Ken. I was just going to say, I'm thinking some guy on the internet is slowly not becoming such a small-time sysadmin. I mean, he's really, really embraced something. I mean, his backups are way more intricate and consistent than mine are.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's an interesting take on the solution. Quite impressive, actually. Yeah,
I love the echo. Good heavens! Yeah, that's something you don't want to see in the backup script. Fantastic. And Lurking Prying says, "Thank you. Thanks for the shout out. Thank you for sharing how you maintain the system. The Centfold folder is well worth backing up. Keep up the good work. I enjoy your show and look forward to hearing more."
And Kevin O'Brien says, "Thank you. Thanks for the shout out. I think all of us share our information to help each other, and I love your shows."
Super. The Linux in-laws, HPR's inner working. And this was a feedback on the show that I did. Twin says, "Painful. This is painful to listen to and provided zero value. How do we get the Linux in-laws kicked off HPR?" Right. Not the most positive comment ever, but there's going to be more of that, unfortunately. Some of it for me as well. Anyway, carry on, Dave.
Some guy on the internet says, "I have more listeners than stars in the universe." I got a great laugh from this show. More listeners than people in the galaxy. Lol. That's the first time I've ever heard Martin clearly. His audio is usually too low for me to hear. Playing the Ken soundbite was a nice touch as well. Good stuff.
Excellent. You can trust some guy on the internet to bring the positive out of people. Love it. Yes, some dodgy guy is developing a HPR static site generator, generating a lot of spam in my inbox because I see all your commits.
Yeah, they'll just let anybody do that sort of thing these days.
Yeah, they will.
Shall I read the comment?
Please do, yeah.
Let's
say what you're doing for a start. Describe your show.
So, in this episode, Rowan Moi talks about generating a static site static site generator for HPR. It's based in that arcane Perl language everybody keeps talking about, and using the template toolkit, which is actually a very awesome module for Perl. It's amazing what you can do with it. It really is. I don't know if you want a quick status update. I think I've got.
Please, yes. Now will be a good time for a status update.
Okay. I think I'd say I'm like at that 95% stage now. There's some more feeds I need to generate in RSS, but I think I have all the pages working. There's some few little not quite looking exactly like the HPR tweaks, like CSS, or maybe just changing the HTML a little bit. And the only other thing I can't do now is the number of days until the next episode is, or next slot is open. But I think I have all the other dynamic stuff figured out at this point with your help there, Ken. Thank you.
We have you could cheat actually and use the stats.php page. A lot of that stuff is coming from the stats.php page, and you could kind of take it from there. I don't know what your approach is. If you can fix it using the tooling, that's great. But if you can't, then and I think the whole uploading stuff anyway is always going to be for the short term. Well, for the short medium term, it's going to need a database, and it's going to need to be in one place. Otherwise, we can't lock the reservations.
Right. I know. I can look into it. I can maybe just have a second script that runs, or just add something specific for the generator to grab it and parse that somehow. But everything else I've been able to get from using SQLite from the dump, using that converter script I found. So that's been nice. Cool. So we don't really, at some point, if we switch over to, that directly, I mean, the code, will work, particularly if we keep the same schema, and then we can work on it to change the schema.
I actually want to fix a lot of the pages as well. I think there's two all over the shop, but you continue doing what you're doing, then we switch over, and then we can do the fix.
Okay, sounds good. So I guess my biggest thing now is just if I could get a few more eyes on the page with just like, this doesn't quite look right, or this doesn't work, or you missed this link. I mean, I've run a link, I can't remember what the tool is off the top of my head right now, that goes through and it'll tell me, and I can sort of guess which ones are just because they're pointing, at something I haven't done. And then there's some pages I'm just not going to do, and I, need to fix the links. But overall, it's making good progress.
Go ahead, over.
I said overall, I'm making good progress.
Yeah. Yes. And some of the pages we might, if you're beating your head against the wall, some of the pages we can maybe just get rid of, or can fix, won't fix.
Okay.
Anyway, some guy on the internet says, more magic. I didn't know how you guys remember all these languages. I have to jump into the man page for almost everything. Is Perl one of your daily languages, and is it better for databases than Python? Great show. So you can answer that yourself.
Yeah. I think I mentioned in my episode, I did get into Perl early, like in my early days. That was sort of the CGI scripting language for doing anything dynamic at the time. And I've done some stuff with it over the years. I think part of it is you'll find the more programming you do, there's just a lot of similarities in concepts between programming languages. So once you sort of grasp that, it's like, oh, I just need to figure out how to write it correctly. I mean, there's more concepts you learn. Some languages have concepts like, you get into maps or closures and all that fun stuff, and that's a little funky. Perl, this has actually taken me probably longer than I would have, because it's been so long since I've used Perl, and Perl has some funky ways to do argument passing and returning just based on its, I guess, age and the concepts. So you actually get into pointer dereferencing and all sorts of fun stuff that made my head spin a little bit until I finally got things working.
Yes, but actually that templating language, it looks really logical, actually.
The templating language is actually made, that's sort of the nice and easy part. It was the actual site generator itself, like the program part, that where things like took me a little while sometimes. Like the function logic would work, but then it was just like getting the variables into it and out of it, which was the hard part.
Yeah.
Yes. It's I will admit that Perl does have some strange and wonderful ways about it, but it's quite powerful once you get your head around some of the weirdnesses. I think the first Perl script I ever wrote was we just started to run Unix systems. We were running Yellow Pages on it, and Yellow Pages is a thing that lets you identify the groupings of your users and give permissions and access to things. But it's a very fragile structure, and it's a sort of tree-like thing, which, if it gets unbalanced, things go completely bad. And we were loading users into this thing, and it was going really, really bad. So you have to balance it, but there's no tools to do it. Well, there weren't any tools at that point. So I wrote a Perl script which absorbed all of this weird tree structure thing with internal links between the data structure, and then balanced that, and then wrote it back out again, and that solved the problem. But I was amazed that it was possible to do it so nicely. But yeah, lots of dereferencing, you know. But I'd been an assembler programmer, so I wasn't too fazed by that. But yeah, it's I do understand if anybody goes to Perl and goes, "What? No."
Yeah. And as far as databases go, I think one of the other nice thing about Perl is the CPAN, the Comprehensive Perl Archive Network, which is sort of like the granddaddy of all node-like or app-like kind of, you know, package repositories. There is just something for everything, whether it's easier than Python's module. I mean, you can find what you need to get done is basically what happens. Now, there may be 20 ways, 20 different modules, and you got to find a good one. But yeah, so far, like, it was just the Perl DBI and DBD modules, and it just worked.
Yeah, it's quite a nice interface. My son's currently using an ORM in Python as part of his job, and he's finding that he hates the ORM because he learned databases from the ground up, and he finds the ORM removes his view of it all. And same with Perl, there are ORMs for databases as well. But whether you want to use them, I don't know. I certainly don't.
Okay, shall we go from Perl to BASIC? Following day was Ahuka with "We continue our technological archaeology to explore the old warehouse DOS. This time it's in BASIC." Somebody want to read Beezus' comment?
I think it's probably my turn. I don't think I've said much lately. Beezus says, "BASIC lives on. I think it's a real pity that BASIC is not taken seriously by more developers. I agree that in its early days it was, well, BASIC, but it evolved into a very powerful development platform in the guise of Visual Basic. Productivity was far higher than with Visual C++, and for what few low-level functions it couldn't support. You could always create a DLL using C or C++ and pull that in from Visual Basic. In Linux, we still have Gambas, which is easily the fastest way to create a Linux GUI application. It's very similar to Visual Basic, and its flavor of Basic takes the language to a level beyond even VB. For projects where I have complete freedom of choice, I use nothing else. It runs faster than Python, and for GUI apps, it's far simpler and more productive."
Never heard of it? Definitely a show there, if not a series.
Mm-hmm. I've tinkered with it, but thought, I don't really want to
do it. Well, a collaborative series, wow!
I think Beezer would be the lead in that particular partnership. Yeah.
And by some guy on the internet, "Visual Basic 6.0 for the win. How many of you used Yahoo Messenger during the Win98 era? I remember these software handguns called booters. They were created using VB and everyone had one. It was the Wild West on the internet, and lots of feelings were hurt, following by the BSOD, Blue Screen of Death. Good times."
No idea what those were. Booters.
Yeah, that one I hadn't heard of either.
No. Also a show. Okay.
Yep.
Ham radio testing. Congratulations, Archer72. Or did I spoil it? I think I spoiled it. Do I have to go back and edit it? Anyway, Archer72, well done. Ham radio license, not that hard. Put in some time and effort.
Yeah, well done. Absolutely well done.
Yep, I'm more and more toying with the idea of going ahead and doing that once I get done the Hacker Public Radio website.
Super. Yes, I wasn't going to say that. I was going to say do both. And Archer72 says that the left out in the show notes, K-Magnifier was the tool I mentioned in the show, also known as K-Mag. So the next day we had part one of the New Year's Eve show 2021-2022, who the mumble server is provided by Delwyn, the site by Josh, stream and Etherpad by Honky, and the show notes by my all-time hero, H.P. Lovecraft. What an excellent, excellent job they have done, making links to every single thing that was mentioned in it. Brilliant.
Absolutely. The dedication there is amazing.
I don't think only you and I, Dave, will truly appreciate the amount of effort that has taken, or any of the people who've gone around and helped us with the fixing the tags and stuff. That you can't just listen. You have to listen and then stop and then go, what was that? Rewind 14 times because of the accent, and then find the page, find the links. Unbelievable the amount of work. It easily took twice or three times the length of these shows, and these shows were like 24 hours, so this was a job and a half. Well done.
Yes, the show notes are amazing. I'm really impressed.
I was amazed. I was prattling on about having fiber installed in my house, and I'd mentioned the company, and there's a link to the company.
Everything.
Wow. Yeah. Yes. There's also a great bunch of digital equipment thingies in the list. I see Digital Equipment Corporation, VMS, Deck Alpha, blah, blah, blah. Wow.
I know the HBR New Year show is quite a handful to absorb of a day. But these show notes really help. I was there for that bit, or I was talking there, or that's somebody else, or that has to be whoever came along. So, yeah, very good.
Yeah, brilliant. H.P. Lovecraft is frequents the Linux Logcast podcast and Mastodon channel. So,
right, very good.
So yeah, I went over there because I do visit them occasionally and sent them congratulations for the work done there. So yeah,
super. Fantastic. Well, the next day, how I got into tech, as promised, was Stash F Alpha Foxtrot, and from deletingcommand.com in Windows to tinkering CircuitPython. And there's a thing that I'd like more shows on, actually, is CircuitPython, because I'd like to know, is it easier to use than Arduino, or the version of C that's in Arduino? Or
it's also
what?
Competing with MicroPython, I think, isn't it?
Yeah.
Is that the Adafruit version, the CircuitPython? I don't
know.
Sure. I haven't really got into
not
that.
Not sure, Dave, because nobody submitted a show about it, you see.
This is absolutely... I was just reinforcing what you're saying there.
I get all my tech info from HPR. Whose turn is it to do a... Ron, you could do DNT's comment.
Okay. By DNT, welcome. Great show. The command.com story with shout-out to Ahuka was well-received. Looking forward to more.
So the next day, we had some guy on the internet with secret hat conversations. I had to chuckle at this one, how to properly create a tinfoil hat. Absolutely awesome. But brings up lots of interesting discussions about monitoring and knowing where you are. And I was thinking, actually, I was listening to this on the way from the bus into work, and every time I've been passing there, this show has popped into my head, and I was thinking, well, actually, even if I didn't have a phone, it would be fairly obvious to identify where I was of a day, because if I'm not at home, then I'm on this train, following this line into this station, taking that bus, going to this place, sitting there and going back. You know, people are creatures of habit, so all the observation isn't really necessary if you did the legwork.
Mm-hmm. That's the way it was done before everybody had tracking devices in their pockets. But But this is so much easier. This is why I always turn off the location thing, except when I'm, you know, using the Google Map or something.
Yeah, but even that, you know, they can tell that's from the towers now, because your average tower is divided into three different sections. So they can tell the direction from that tower and that tower, and they get you a general area. So if they want to know where you are, they will. But
The tinfoil hat was for your phone then, is it?
The tinfoil hat was for your head, Dave. One of Spoon says, serious talking. Good to hear somebody reminding others that some tin foil may go a long way when folded correctly. Scary biscuits aside, I do occasionally hold a sheet of aluminium foil between myself and a rescued microwave oven. They gave
scintillations.
Thank you.
Scintillation.
Scintillations will show up better in the dark, by which means and holes might be revealed. That actually, if that was anybody else, right? Anybody else in the network, with the exception of maybe, let me see. I'm now going to have to find 1 second. Great. Let's try truncate. Silence that, shall we? Sigflop. 1 second. Yes, Sigflop. With the exception of Sigflop, I wouldn't think that they were being serious about taking microwave ovens apart, but one of Spoons and possibly Mickey Otrotic would be on the list of people who might try that. Shows appreciated as ever.
It's pretty scary things, microwave ovens.
Monochromic is in the channel. No, Monochromic, we do not edit. We hate editing. We do truncate silence, though. So, what else? Where were we? Secret Hat Conversations. Next show was, I talk about all the reasons I love Unix, and this, of course, has to be Bin RC. And this was a good rundown, actually. I liked the idea that literally you can do a TTY dump to a file. I was wondering, when I was doing the show notes, was that, you know, pre-block correct or not? And then it made sense. And you have to listen to the show to find out what I'm on about. Brilliant show notes, by the way.
Yes, I think I must have tuned out for some of it. I'll go and read the notes. But what I heard was amazing. Really, really impressive. He's into making fairly chunky shows, I think. This one was nearly an hour. So, but still, it was great to hear his enthusiasm and depth of knowledge, too.
Sure. I commented on this. One thing that he did mention was file extensions are valid. Something upstairs, one moment. Okay. Kids kick football into the back garden. I commented, file extensions are valid. Relying on them is not a good idea, but using them is fine. It also fits right into other conventions, such as the location of the local and system binary files. Relying on the system to determine the file type is slow, and I do a time ls of a lot of file directory, and that only took 0.06 seconds. And then doing the same thing for a file, the file command to identify what type of file it is, that took 2 minutes. So furthermore, they help in giving you a rough idea of what to expect. This is useful when searching and you're thinking some Python file, which I downloaded yesterday, would limit modified. So you could do your search limited to modified time and the PY extension. So don't throw the baby out of the bathwater.
I guess I'll take the next one. Hyperknight, bind mount. Hi, Ben RC. Actually, bind mounts are very useful for change root, chroot roots. E.g., you can have the same dev directory as your actual OS. By the way, it would be interesting to hear an OpenBSD podcast from you.
Yes, thank you, Hyperknight. Good one.
So, yeah, some guy on the internet says, I like file extensions. What Ken said. Also, in viewing files, for example, Vim, Twiddle, Markdown, file.md, file extensions enables text highlighting. Otherwise, we'd have to read Markdown like Anna. as we do, yeah, yes. That's what's been happening to my Markdown. These damned birds and pigeons coming in to read it. Yes, yes. No, it's a good point. It's a good point. I was pondering this after hearing this.
Don't tell me you're backpedaling. The amount of crap I've got from you over the years about file extensions.
What? It's very useful in the context of Vim. Though I must admit that all of my Perl scripts do not end in .pl because I use the mode line function that Vim offers, where you stick a comment at the front or the back of the file that says use such and such a syntax and by the way, set the tab stops to blah 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 blah. Which is amazingly useful thing. So I don't, and the other thing that it will do is it'll look for the hash bang. The start, which indicates which interpreter to run it through. So, but I don't want all of my chairs to be called chair.ch table.
Yeah, but you are called TV. You are called Dave Morris. You're not called Dave.
Oh, true. Yeah. But an extension is not a surname, is it? It's just it's like having a label on your head saying, I'm human, I'm not an android or something.
No. It is. It's a namespace. It puts it into the namespace of
Python.
Now, I get what he's saying, that you shouldn't be relying on that totally, but I can understand that you're Dave Morris, but you might also be related to Dave Morris's or the Morris's with the, SIS or something. No. It should be a guideline as opposed to, you're not related to Morris's.
I've done my genealogy. I'm not. No. We gained the S in about 17 something or other. Oh, no. I think first census, so the census taker didn't spell our name right, and it seemed to stick.
Excellent. That's a
I'm sure you wanted to know that, didn't you?
I did. I do, actually. I do want to know. I'm fascinated by this stuff. Anyway, where were we?
Oh, there's a comment. Lord. Shall I?
Yeah.
Yes, I just did one, so it's you or Owen for the next one. One of
Spoons. Come on, why are we paying you the big bucks?
By One of Spoons, free revision. Thanks for this episode. Reminded me of so many things. 12 years since I studied this stuff. For a lot of weeks relating to Solaris. During those studies, I repeatedly wondered, so what? The foot bone is connected to the leg bone. Nevertheless, sometimes it pays to recognize one's available environment. He stimulated my brain through a good chunk of dull work. I would listen to this one again one day.
That is high praise indeed. Excellent. The next day, one weird trick. This is Lurking Prion, and Brian, is it? Or is this the one? So anyway, I'll tell you what it is. He talks about getting into advanced or cybersecurity and how keyboards could trick malware. And this was an interesting... they've done a few fireside chat things themselves, and they are words of wisdom. I really want to give them to certain people that I know. And... the trick is that if you put a Russian keyboard on your laptop, some malware will go look at it and go, well, I don't want to mess with that laptop, so I'm not going to install my malware. So that's pretty cool.
Yes. Who'd have thought of that? It's a good one.
Oh, why not? I comment on one of the things that they mentioned in there about enthusiasm and willingness to learn. As someone who's interviewed people for jobs, it's amazing the hoops you'll go through with HR to hire somebody with enthusiasm and willingness to learn.
I'll do the next one. Lurking Prion says, rare gems indeed. I was always lucky enough to be on really good terms with HR. I'm of the firm belief that you should know the people in HR and legal on a first name basis. Bacon saved, smiley face.
Yes. You should know them on a first name basis before they come. It should be from you going to them, not the other way around. Just FYI. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, I get the message.
And here we have again the next New Year show. And let me see, Maglite, dialects in West Virginia, scroll down a little bit, random. Nuclear power in the US, mumble, push to talk tips, burn notices, ooh. GTA Vice City, scrolling down. ITIL certification, scrolling down. And Gorzilla with Clint Eastwood. You just have to, that's the New Year show for you. It's awesome. It's probably time to start recording promos and sending them out.
Yeah. You're not wrong, actually. Yeah.
Yeah. So, Monochromic, do you want to speak? Speak now or forever hold your peace. If we say his name three times, he will appear. Monochromic. Monochromic. Monochromic! This is where you, Rowan, you can do that. Do, 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 do.
Sorry about that. Oh, well, maybe he's having hard times. Nope, nobody can hear you.
Nobody can hear you. Let me do it. No, nobody can hear you. Anyway, this was a good show. John, I don't know where to get all these people, actually. John Howley from kernel.org fame. And this was a good background to, basically how kernel.org worked before Git was invented, etc., etc., etc. So you should all definitely have a listen to that one.
Yeah, it was definitely an interesting show, and I do always like the guests they have and their technical stuff. It's always really interesting.
Yeah, I'm working for VMware now, which is interesting as well. Pretty cool. Okay, following day we had Hyper Nike. We're saying. Or it could be Hi-er-Nicky. Anyway, I'll shut up. My first podcast, My Journey into the Computer World. How I was introduced to computers, Linux, robotics, programming, cybersecurity, and more. And what? No comments.
No, it was a fascinating show, and like just sort of the way it sort of started building on each other and that sort of outside influence.
Yeah. The learning Scratch and then going to the Khan Academy have some excellent stuff. Actually, if you could post the link to the show that you, or the series there, because I wouldn't mind learning a little bit of JavaScript. It's always been something on my list, but I've missed.
Mm-hmm. I've not tried that one myself. I tried, there's a guy on YouTube I've been following, because my son was trying to learn JavaScript for various things for work, so I said, I'll sort of follow you along, but he zoomed on ahead, so but still there's some good stuff. I would certainly appreciate pointing to
an particular one. Anybody who can do an introductory show on JavaScript, I'm not looking for how to rewrite, you know, artificial intelligence, but you know, just the basic introduction, how you get started, how you can test, etc., etc.
We could write a static site generator.
You could.
On a site that won't run JavaScript, that might be a problem. I'm not sure.
Changing plans, travel. You got to be aware of that. This was where Ahuka planned their RV thing during COVID times and how they got around that. I love this series, and you wonder why this is of interest to hackers, is because it actually, he's applying this to travel, but it goes with a lot of things. You've got to be ready for a change of plan, you know, go with the flow type thing, but in a controlled fashion.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The tools that are available for helping out with this sound really impressive, and
yeah,
take it into a whole new level of facilities and flexibility, I guess.
Yeah, and the good old spreadsheet. As ever, Ahuka has got detailed show notes on his own blog, which are excellent.
Yes, I'm going to have to send my parents links to this. They have a camper, and they've done some traveling, mostly out west to see my sister with it. But I'm sure that some of this planning would help them out, too.
Yeah, and just to, even if it all doesn't apply to you, I mean, the things that you need to take into account, you know, practical things, the height of your vehicle, how you could do it in one day, but do you wanna? Even that applies to, I've been thinking of maybe doing a train trip around Europe, you know, just go over to Berlin for chips, that sort of thing. Chips being French fries. Take the night train and blah, blah, blah.
It does make good just general travel plans that you can then...
Okay, the next day, we had response to episode 3655, BSD for Linux Users, by Claudio Miranda, and links to his WordPress blog on it, and Geeky Experiences episodes. And it's my... I'll do the comment. Alan86 says, feedback... Yeah, OpenBSD is great. Great episode. I have not heard before about Evo laptops. It would be nice to hear more about them. Admitted, Dave, Alan64 is an alias, and you're just plugging them for more shows.
No. We'll not admit.
Speak to us, Monochromic. Speak to us.
Can you hear me now?
Yes! He's
okay,
alive!
Sorry about the... No yes, problem. Sorry about the technical mishap and sorry about the delay. I have to jump pretty soon, so just my 2 cents on the on our show. That was actually John Hurd on kernel.org. This was our third but last show on something called Hacker Public Radio. I would like to take the opportunity to thank Hacker Public Radio for the last 2.5 years. It has been a great experience. And full disclosure, of course, I'm one of the in-laws. Yes. If you read the mailing list, you probably know who I am. Martin and myself constitute a podcast. A podcast. Yes, called Linux in Laws. What left a bittersweet aftertaste in our mouths, basically, were some of the comments on the mailing list about Linux in Laws and HPR in general. So, come October. And nothing much will change. We are moving to archive.org. The RSS feed is in the process of being adapted. Nothing much will change if you follow our RSS feed. And Ken has already kindly agreed, I hope that's still the case, Ken, that there's a redirect in place to our RSS feed if you have subscribed to the HPR one. So nothing much you have to change. Our RSS feed, of course, always will be up to date. And simply, we are moving then to archive.org.
Yeah, and I'd just like to say there about the feedback that I think a lot of people are frustrated at the situation, and I believe this is entirely down to me that I didn't manage the situation very well. A lot of HPR listeners are frustrated at the fact that Linux in Laws were on HPR as a podcast within HPR. And but that was, you were on the understanding that we're a podcast hosting platform, and that all makes a lot more sense. And I'm really sorry the way it went down. We'll be going through the comments again. But for those people making those comments, I can understand your frustration, but I don't think the in-laws have done anything wrong in this situation, and I hope you can continue to publish shows, and we will of course be publicizing your feed, and we will be, of course, if you're willing to, via the freeculturepodcasts.org site, promoting your show. If you give us a wedge of stickers, we'll hand them out at Boots and that sort of thing. So I would like to salvage some bit of... it could have gone better, the transition, is basically what I'm saying. I'm sorry about the way it went down. It wasn't great.
No, and Ken, no worries. And don't get me wrong, I'm not trying to pin any... What's what I'm looking for? Any fault on you? No, not at all. We were just not impressed by some of the feedback of the community, because this is exactly what leaves open source in the public view with a bitter aftertaste.
Yeah.
Similar to the likes of the kernel mailing list, Guido van Rossum stepping down, all the rest of it. I'm not comparing that, but it's still not a great experience. What happened within the last, what, 2 or 3 weeks? Something like that. And Ken, as I said, my mail, the second 10 beers on the in-laws should we meet again. And again, I would like to thank Hacker Public Radio, being a podcast or podcast hosting platform. Frankly, and I hope I can say that on the show, I don't give a shit.
Yeah, no, that's
but
fine.
Again, thank you for your hospitality for the last 2.5 years, and thank you for your support.
No problem. And again, you'll see in the comments that if you look at it from the point of view of the HPR, people do appreciate your shows, and I'm sure that the majority of HPR subscribers will go over and also subscribe to your feed. So yeah, there's lots of lessons that we can learn from this, and the door is always open to you guys. You know, if you have shows that don't fit in with the Linux and all stuff,
absolutely,
whack them up here on HPR, and don't be strangers. We will, we will try to put this, learn from our mistakes, and try to put this behind us if we can.
Much, much appreciated. And as I said, and as you kindly suggested, feel free to put us on the what is it, free podcast?
Yeah, freeculturepodcast.org. Norris,
yes, thank you.
Has as yet. Unaware that he has volunteered to take over that, so hopefully
much by appreciated, Dave.
Yeah. And
put us on. Great, great.
Are you going to FOSDEM then?
That's the intention. Yes.
Yeah. If you see the call for stands, we might try doing that stand thing again, and then obviously get some stickers and stuff, and we can put it into the HPR Boots both here and in the US and in the UK, so that your stickers and stuff are.
Yeah, let me talk to marketing if Martin hasn't fired the department yet. Again, let's put it this way. Long-time listeners will know that, but what that means. Anyway, guys, yeah. I got to run. Thank you very much for the last 2.5 years, and look forward to meeting you soon.
All righty. See you, Foster. At least I have to buy you a nice beer. That's the good thing.
Looking forward to it. Take care. Bye.
Bye. So we did back to response to BSU user Linux. And the next show was the New Year Show Part 3. And you can see lots of stuff about the Netherlands coming in. So obviously my son is partaking in that one.
And your daughter, yes.
Yes, so you've heard, yeah.
I've heard it, and it was good. I really enjoyed it. They're interesting to listen to. I did enjoy hearing all about the delights of the Netherlands and so forth.
A little bit, yes. He does enjoy the show, but he sometimes gets a little bit excited and forgets to stop talking and forgets to listening to other people, like myself. But it's a lesson that we have to learn, I'm afraid.
Well, it can happen to all of us, I think. But there was some good dialogue going on. It wasn't just a one-sided diatribe. It was there were some interesting chats between your children and the American audience,
yeah.
and a few others. There was a Swedish guy on, and Klacke popped in and out occasionally.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, so I thought it sounded to me like the sort of discussion that if you were sat on a bus next to people like that, would be fascinating to listen to and to join in, perhaps.
Okay.
And if you're going to be a little long-winded, that is the show to be a little long-winded.
Absolutely.
Very true.
Yeah, that's what you're signing up for, yeah. The following day, we had recording for HBR. This was DNT, podcasting tips about how he recorded. And he had an iPhone 7 with Apple earbuds, a Zoom H1, Sennheiser MB Pro 2, and a Pixel 3 with a Dolby app. And there was also some nice tips here about compressors and stuff, and EQ and all the rest of it.
Yep, another show I need to listen to over again just to make sure I'm absorbing as many hints as possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was just thinking the same because I heard this morning before this recording, so it's a bit late. But it was it had some really helpful hints and experiences talked about there. Excellent.
And good old Mr. Gadget. I hope to hear from him again.
I've seen the odd tweet from him occasionally.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's still around, but I'm not sure whether I saw him on Mastodon or whether it was Twitter. But
if you see him, can you CC there? Say hello and copy myself and the HBR account so we can subscribe.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. I'll bear that in mind. He good guy. I did message him once a long time ago. It's been a while since he's been on, and just to say, really impressed with his shows. And you know how sometimes mm-hmm. it's good to send a message to people just to congratulate them. And he was really, really friendly and a nice guy to converse with. We're good.
Okay, there were a few comments on previous shows, which is back at the episode 3676 page, and it. On my own show about infinity is just a big number and other proofs, I include the SMBC comic where there's somebody having a dialogue with the creator asking, does math exist? And then it goes on to say, infinity, seriously, what's going on down there?
I've never seen that, but that made me laugh. Yeah, it's good.
He's done another few since then. So, yeah. Do you want to do the in-laws one?
Mm-hmm. The comment from Aaron on show 3629 from the in-laws. What an excellent interview, he says. He or she says, I'm a big fan of Mozilla and Firefox. It was fascinating to hear what Eric had to say. I've forgotten the guy's name, but I remember that one being particularly good.
Yeah. See, there are positive comments on in-law shows.
I think a lot of people have said the interview ones are good, but sometimes they ramble a bit too much on the other ones. But the interview ones, they're really, really on the ball. Sorry.
Yeah.
On you go.
Shall I take this one?
Please, yeah.
Okay. A comment by Sean on episode 3643, My Computing History and the Software I Use by Ben RC. Let's see, Sean says, key bindings. You can remap your control and alt keys using UDEV with HWDB, e.g. interchanging control and caps keys, https://wiki.archlinux.org/title/map_scancodes_2_keycodes#example for custom HWDB. And you can use control plus the left square paren to send an escape character or square bracket.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Once you've done this a few times, you'll be going link in the show notes.
Yes. And by the way, the way we see the comments here, we don't see these as proper URLs, whereas on the actual comment, it's the URLs made active.
Yeah. A response by Folky to my show, a response to tomorrow's show. I do precisely like a long-time lurker, so you clearly can't count the downloads as listeners. My podcatcher is downloading all HBR shows, and I'm deciding afterwards if I want to listen. Surprise, in the case of the Linux in-laws, I deleted without listening as I see it's one of those. Can't quite say why, but after two of their shows, I've had enough. It's just not my taste. Okay. I know, I strongly suspect as soon as people hear my voice, there's a massive delete going on, but that's okay. My inferiority complex is better than yours. No, actually, that's not the joke. Your inferiority complex is better than mine. Yes, that's the joke.
That's better, yes.
That makes more sense, doesn't it? Okay, what now, Dave? Do we tackle these? Dave and Ron, are you up for this thread? Because it's a shitstorm, basically.
Let's do it. Unless it's long enough to make another show out of.
Yeah.
There's a lot. There is a lot.
And it essentially says Ken is a moron.
It was a situation that got a little out of your hands, that's all.
Okay, let's do the accessibility thing. Mike Ray, I just spotted a glaring accessibility issue on HBR site. I just listened to the community news published today and heard a mention about a show from Kafka, which I need to know about right now for work. So I went to the site and the tags page. Running down the list of tags begins with the letter K. I found Kafka, :3639. That's fine. But only the 3639 bit is included in the link. So when I hit the K button to navigate to the link in NVDA, a Windows screen reader, all I get is number after number after number. I believe all the major screen readers include a key to jump from link to link. No idea which is the Kafka show. So the link needs to be changed to include the tag in the anchor. I have mentioned this before, an anchor should include the full text to describe the link, not just the word here. As in, click here about invisible giraffes with six legs. I would want the whole thing in the link so that I can find the link about invisible giraffes with six legs, not just here. Ah! I don't know how I missed that when it was published, but I am one of those people who screw up the stats because I delete most of the shows based on the titles after making sure it's not one of my must-listen of hosts. Linux in laws is not one of these. Okay, fair enough. Dave, do you want to do Dave's response?
That sounds good. Yes. Yes. Hi, Mike. I say, I must apologize for this problem. The page is something I designed and constructed myself. For new readers, we're talking about, and I give a link to the tags.php page. I wanted the page to be like an index in a book with the keyword tag on the left, followed by a list of the page show numbers. As I designed this, it seemed that each link was best presented as a number. I didn't know that screen readers would cope badly with this. I'm wondering if there's a way of including text that would help a screen reader while leaving the list of show numbers as it is. I was unavailable this morning, blah, blah, blah. I saw the warnings that many screen readers will not use the attribute. Oh, sorry, I skipped over a bit. I've been trying doing what some accessibility advice I found suggests, namely giving each link to a show a text attribute. In experiment one, I added the show title there. I saw the warnings that many screen readers will not use this attribute. I also wonder if this will have the effect of making the page excessively complex for screen readers that do use it. Using this text has the advantage for sighted users that hovering over the link shows what the episode's about. I find many references to accessible rich internet applications, ARIA in my research, and I see what I could And I see that I could add these types of attributes. What do you think?
I can take this. Hello, Dave. Apologies for top posting. This is from Mike Ray response. If you get your hands on the Bootstrap 3 styles CSS, search for SR-only. I suggest you might want to create a bogus tag Ali, A, or is it A11? Okay. With a link to a bogus show. And when you have done that, let me know. Although, of course, the styling is probably done in a loop, so any style applied will be applied to all. And I guess what you mean by index is that you want any tag to appear on the page only once, but then followed by a column to the right with the show numbers. I'm sorry to moan about this, but running down a list is very, very, very annoying when meaningful entry is not included in the link. In case of HBR tags page, I just get a number after number, and on a lot of pages, as I suggested before, there's only ever the word here that is linked. jumping either forwards or backwards through the links with K or Shift K, I have no idea when I've landed on a link I want. Perhaps we can do some trials and give me the nod each time you made an update. PHP? Yuck. The answer to is where it's at, Dave. All the Perl happening dudes are there. Mike.
And then I reply, I think I understand the problem. You have the search text and then the episode numbers where that keywords appear. For example, Kafka 3639, New Line, Kali Linux 1457. So when you search for Kafka, you land on 3639, which is what you hear, is fine because that's the show about Kafka. But you cannot see if there are two more shows for Kafka. Because when you tab to the next link, which is 1457, which is not about Kafka, but is in fact about Kali Linux. If somebody else records a show about Kafka, then you would have Kafka, colon, 3639, comma, space, 9999, New Line, Kali Linux, colon, 1457. So when you search for Kafka, it would then go 3639, then 9999, then 1457. So there's no indication to the show which link is about Kafka. Is that the problem? If so, then the solution would be to have the tag included in the first link. So the first hyperlink would be, would say, basically, Kafka, colon, 3639. And then the second one will be 9999. And then for as many shows as they are. When you jump to the next tag, you would hear Kali Linux 1457, and then any other show numbers that follow. Is that a solution? Or would you just have each tag as a headline and then each show having its own line with a complete line of text? To which Mike responded.
So I was just getting my head around that because I didn't fully appreciate what was being said in that email. Mike replies, let me see if I can explain this in simple terms with a list. Imagine this list on a website, and I'm not going to put HTML here, since A, emails with HTML in are a crime against humanity, and B, it might upset the email clients folks have set for HTML and not plain text. So his list is, click here to go to the foot of our stairs, click here to eat vanilla ice cream, click here to get rid of all right-wing governments forever, click here to restore human rights across mainland Europe, click here if you think eSpeak is the best TTS engine ever. There are five entries in that list. If each sentence only had the word here included in the anchor, then starting from the top and using the navigation key, screen reader, which the screen reader provides for jumping through links, I would hear, here, 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 here. It's about as useful as a chocolate teapot, since I would not know what each of those here things were. I'm aware that you're not using a screen reader yourself. This is hard to understand. If you are not using a screen. And just using a screen reader to test this stuff is hard, since getting to the point where you are relaxed and familiar with a screen reader takes time. I would say if I can work out a way to record the text from my screen reader while I K down through a list of links or of links of tags on HBR. Presumably the eSpeak tag list must be longer than War and Peace. He's right, of course.
He replied, or do you want to do his reply?
I'll do that as well, yeah. Do you want me to reading further down your email than I did before, Ken, this solution would work. If the tag subject were included in the first anchor in a list of tags for that subject. So just to break away from that for a second, you are suggesting that the actual word that is the indexed item, which is also an anchor, and you can jump to it if you know. You can put that in the URL and jump to it. Then that, if that were to signal that it is an entry for that particular word, trying to explain this to myself.
Let me go to the tags page and I'll show you exactly what. So we've got tags beginning with pick a number, V, right? So we jump to the video section. So the video, there's a tag called video, and it's got a whole go of numbers behind it. And all that Mike's is going to hear is 26, 29, 41, 64, blah, 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 right through. But what I'm suggesting is for the first link, we start the Ahref colon HBR episode one. The first link is to episode 26. Mm-hmm. So,
it's because, as Mike was saying, there's some text associated with the hyperlink or the anchor itself that's getting read out, not the piece of text that's there for Sygen users.
No, it is the piece of text for Sygen users. That's what's getting read out. That's the problem. But
it's being read out because it's a link.
Yeah. So if you press tab on the page, what's happening? Did you hear anything I said? What was the last
one? No.
Thing? Oh, okay.
I heard you were talking about video and then through the number.
Because during doing that, I was pressing push to talk. I forgot to press push to talk. Okay. If you go to the tags.php page, right, and you click on any of the links, H, for example, what I'm suggesting is, and if you go highlight tags beginning with H, I'm highlighting that section, and I'm highlighting the first two lines, hope 1041 and hack 1598. And I'm doing view source. That was a bad idea.
Depends on your browser, probably, doesn't it?
And I'm doing view selection source, which might be a bit easier. So, okay, you know what would be just a lot easier is if I do this on the HTML page, it would make a lot more sense. So, you know, when you've got a HTML link, it's ahref colon hackers public radio /eps ID equals 1596. And then you have the semicolon, less than, greater than sign, and then the number. So what we're saying for the first one, we include the word hack in the first one. And then you will hear hack 1598. Tab, then you'll hear 1858. Tab, he will hear 2126. Tab, you will see 3382. And if you actually do this on the page and you press tab, you'll see it jumping from link to link to link. And all you have to do is anything where the blue square is over, that's all they're going to hear. Yeah? Because you've landed on the link.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So if you include the text that's from the A space ID hope, or, you know, the strong colon hope strong as part of the first link, then, you know, you tap down to the first link and it gives the name of the tag, then the first show, and then the subsequent ones are going to be related to whatever that was. And then once you go to a new tag, it'll say, new tag, episode 1234, tab 4567, which you kind of know in your brain is related to the previous tag. And then you press tab and it goes foo, episode 1, tab, bar, episode 2. Yeah, get the idea?
Yeah, that makes sense if that works for Mike.
Yeah, I'm preempting what's being discussed later on in the thread, but I was asking about using this area label thingy, which my researchers had shown a lot of screen readers would handle, would deal with it. And in order to test it, I fired up a version of Orca, and with some struggling, managed to get it onto this tag page. And I found that if I went to a particular link, it would say what was in the area label. So at the moment, I haven't moved much further with this because Mike's busy. I think I've not heard back from him. I've got the area label says tag hack colon, which is stupid because it'll say colon, but show, and then it says show 1596. So that was what I thought would be useful. But of course, it depends on whether I know Walker does it, but I'm not sure whether other screen readers would. Yeah.
Yeah. With
me?
No, I am. But I'm thinking if we do it the way I'm suggesting, then we include the tag in the first, then
Yeah. If you call that thing the sort of index term, that the tag word itself or tag phrase itself, that should also have a label on it of some sort that causes the screen reader to speak it. Yeah.
Yeah. Bob Youngman says, you know, this entire thread would make a great HBR episode. From Bob, who's fine to right. talk about other people
it's
making
happening
episodes.
Now, eh?
Yeah, exactly. I'm willing to read this email thread into a microphone and make an episode out of it, but I'm visually dependent. So while I think I understand the problem and the solution, I'm no Ali expert.
Not clear how you're supposed to say that. I know it took me a while to work out what it was actually referring to, but
accessibility expert.
Anyway, I don't, it doesn't, it makes sense to somebody else, but not me. But yeah.
And then I said, echo Bob reading accessibility problem thread and redirecting into my Omia show.txt file. To which you replied, Dave.
So I said, hi, Mike. Sorry to have taken several days to reply. Life got in the way a little. I've been fairly brutal with moving previous stuff in the email thread too, but I hope I can address them nevertheless, because the thread was getting really, really tangled. I take your point about the multiple here links, but I hadn't quite realized how unpleasant my list of show numbers after each tag was to a screen reader user. I did battle with Orca for an hour or two and began to get the idea. So since Wednesday, this is dated sadly the 6th of August, I managed to regenerate the tags page with the headings you suggested. He had suggested there should be a header per lump of alphabetic piece of the page, which is there now, as you see. With the headings you suggested in the message with the title, more about tag accessibility. I also added ARIA label attributes to the A tags. At the moment, these contain stuff like tag Kafka colon show 3639. I found that Orca would read these, but I have no idea if other screen readers would. I also seriously doubt that the current content is useful. I think I was referring to the colon because it would just be so annoying, I'm sure. However, it might be a thing to consider. The other disadvantage of this is that Orca says the show number twice, once for ARIA label and again for the hyperlink itself. So maybe just having the tag in this label would be enough. I will generate a new page with a different name, which contains links on separate lines with the show number and title, perhaps the associated tag. This will be very long and some tags will have many entries. I see the tag Linux has 264 entries, for example. Worth a try though. I look at your alternative suggestions as well. Ken's suggestion is also worth testing out.
Ron, do you want to do Carl's response?
Sure. Carl D. Hammond responds, what if the tag name itself was a link to a page with just the shows related to that tag? That's a pretty common pattern I've seen around the web, and it would make more sense to have the show titles on such a page. My hunch is that only improves linear navigation if those links are either the only links on the page or at least grouped together at the start of the page before the show links, like a table of contents. Just brainstorming, land there.
I was thinking about that for the static site generator. Actually, did you hear?
It's going to generate a lot of pages, though, isn't it? Because there's like, I don't know, 600 tags, so 600 pages potentially.
Yeah, but once they're generated.
sure.
Well, except that you have to update, which is actually something I've been thinking about is an update. Option for that site generator so that only the pages that need to be regenerated are regenerated.
Yeah, that's a good optimization, but even if you generate all the pages all the time, so it's expensive. But when you put it onto a disk and we rsync from that disk to the main website, then it's only going to pick up pages that we can set our sync only to look at ones where the file size has changed or something equivalent.
True.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I didn't actually do that. I haven't done the second page yet because I got bogged down with other things. But that will be something I will get to in the next week or two.
And, yeah, I think maybe if we the tags page is a bit big, if we do a page with various different options, pages, you'll have a few tags, and then what's the best from those, because I'd also like to stick to relatively basic HTML rather than using explicit things that only screen readers can use. And if it gets support is dropped or whatever, I'd like it to be the same code for everybody, but working for screen readers, obviously.
There was I think Mike mentioned a CSS enhancement that would help.
Yeah,
which I need to find out more about that. So that's also something that if I were to put together some experimental pages to do the various things, the thing that I suggested, the thing that that Mike suggested and Carl suggested and so forth, then yeah, it maybe and as you say. Maybe construct them such it just grabs the first few tags from the list or something like that.
Yeah, one with a lot of tags, one with only one, one with more, and then you know, a sample. It would also be useful if people listening to this, those of you who have survived, anyone using accessibility tools, if you could ping us on the social medias or on the email list or a comment to this show, if you want to join along in this, the more the merrier would be a good idea, I think, here.
And I can help out with maybe generating that CSS version, Dave, with the static site generator.
Yeah,
if we do
we
it.
Can collaborate on that one, yep.
Because it would be good to get, because if we get it fixed for this, we can get it fixed for all the other issues related to the site itself. Might be an idea to take the HPR CSS as it is now and see can we improve that as well, so that by default all HPR pages benefit from whatever we do on this.
Well, and to that point, because I had read this while I was doing the templates, I have gone through and I think I've changed most of the links for the static site generator to not just say here, but to try to give them context now.
Cool. Yes. Excellent.
Okay.
Okay, Dave, your last comment was?
I did a reply to Carl. So I'll read that out, yeah. On the mailing list. Interesting thought, I said to Carl. At present, the tag page in question is an offshoot of the project, now completed, to add tags and summaries to all the shows. I separated the tag list, which I refer to as the index, from the main page about what work we still needed done, because I thought it would be a useful thing. So the workflow was add new tags and summaries to the database, refresh the two pages, and I'd normally do this as updates came in. Now I update whenever new shows are added to make sure their tags are listed. I generate the pages locally on my desktop PC and upload them so the tag page is static and updated when there's a change. There are currently 5,837 tags in the system, so that would mean a number of tag-specific pages, I guess.
Yes.
Yes, it would.
But, yes. And Mike replies more about tag accessibility. I just went to the tags page again. Going down the page shows all the tags for each starting letter. There's nothing but a go-to index link between each. For example, between K and the L page. Another screen reader option is to jump from heading to heading, so it would be better if there was heading something like beginning with K. You switched to using headings, didn't you?
Yeah, I did that already. Yeah.
Okay.
So you probably just, you could use, if the ARIA thing is working, you could just put tags beginning with and the aria, and then it would say, it should, I'm guessing, say tags beginning with and then K. I think is what he's saying to give it context.
Yeah.
Tags beginning before each block of the text, then the screen reader user could jump to the from heading to heading until they find the letter they want. Okay, that makes sense. And then hitting K to jump from link to link is annoying when you're going through a list of letters in the alphabet plus some more is a long list. So heading after Z would probably be a landmark to jump to in the absence of the usual skip to link, which is put in the accessibility webpage. A note about that. Most webpages written by accessibility aware authors include links and landmarks that are invisible to people who see but are spoken by screen readers, such as skip to main content, skip to navigation. I can provide information on how to do that if you want. Yes. In fact, here it is. My apologies if the HTML screws up anybody's client. Was tough. The last one was tough for me. SR only, absolute, blah, 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 blah. Width 1, height 1, padding 0, margin minus 1, overflow is hidden, and rectangle of 0, border of 0. So that's useful for hiding everything from CSS. And SR only, screen reader only, focusable, active, SR only, focus, colon, focus, static, auto, auto, width, height, auto, auto, margin 0, overflow visible. Clip is auto, end of style. So put that at the beginning of your page, and then href class, skip to main content, is only visible for people with accessibility. And the href will not be visible, but my e-reader will speak it. The div class ID content role main, don't forget to close the div, or perhaps use a div forward slash thingy. And then you will see create other landmarks and visible tags audible to my screen reader, but not visible to photon dependent types. However, I dislike this, Dave and Ron, because we should have skip to main content there and skip navigation visible to all. Shouldn't have to hide anything. There's no reason to hide stuff from people. It makes people more aware. Why are they putting that in? What happens if I click on those links? So I disagree with this fundamentally. Make people aware that there are accessibility issues and that we're trying to tackle them. Okay, HPR podcast or hosting platform, let's do it. This is about HPR episode 3658. Is HPR a podcast or a podcast hosting platform, by myself. In this episode, our two aging heroes explore the inner workings of a podcast or the podcast hosting platform, depending on your perspective, called Hacker Public Radio. So my question to the community is, are we a podcast or a podcast hosting platform? I believe there is a fundamental difference between the two. Knowing which we are impacts the direction we take as a project. Can you please provide your view on this? Can you do Windigo, Dave? And Ron, can you take Dave Lees?
So Windigo says, I see us as a podcast. I don't contribute episodes of the Windigo podcast to HPR podcast network. I contribute episodes to HPR.
Ron?
Sorry, I'm jumping through. It just says, mine says an HTML attachment was scrubbed. Maybe, am I not looking? I'm just some sort of scrolling through.
It's not your problem, Rowan. It's because that's what Mailman does.
Okay, do I need to click on that attachment thing?
No, I don't think you can see it. I think it just chops it right off. It hates HTML.
I've more experience of doing this. I'll do it. Dave Lee said, no, not a problem. In my somewhat experienced opinion, a podcast is a single feed of a related episode. A podcast hosting platform is a dedicated service that hosts multiple podcasts. Based on the definition, HPR, despite often being used as a hosting provider, is actually a podcast. Happy to discuss further. And I'll do Josh's. Josh says, podcast hosting platform would imply that there are multiple podcasts supported by the platform. As far as how the feed readers are concerned, HPR is a podcast with multiple hosts.
And then Kevin O'Brien says, definitely a podcast. It is a single feed in my Gpodder. If it were a network, there would be a separate feed for every podcast. It's a It's a floor wax. No, it's a dessert topping.
And shall I do Mike's?
Yeah.
Mike Ray says, it's a podcast with multiple hosts.
DNT says, it's a podcast, of course. And the only important consequence of someone claiming that HPR is a podcast hosting service is that it raises the possibility that perhaps hosts shouldn't be allowed to style their shows as a show within HPR as if syndicated. Before this, it could be easily tolerated. In my view, the practice is tacky anyway. You'd think that almost 17 years history would be good enough for you to be part of. Hosts who instead dress it up as something else are just missing the point to some extent.
Bob Trigalis replies, throwing a wrench into the works, I loathe the term podcast. Podcast implies that it is an Apple product, while the word pod is not a registered trade style of the Apple Corporation, it still sounds like it is somehow associated with Apple. Rather, when I used to be an audio content creator, I always preferred to refer to internet audio content as netcast, a la Leah Laporte. But Laporte gave up on trying to rebrand internet audio content as netcast some time ago. Whatever the case, I have found that using netcast doesn't cause confusion, at least to the rare netcaster I write to from time to time. So it might be a rebranding for HBR to consider given its hacker roots. But to answer the question, I consider HPR to be a netcast. With respect, Bob.
And I reply, based on the answers around the podcast feed, is not going to give a clear cut answer. Every host and every series has their own feeds. So anyone can create their own feed pointing to media on HPR or the Internet Archive. So let me clarify the question to, should we be a podcast or a podcast hosting platform? And I'll do the...
Oh, okay.
Sorry.
I was just going to switch to Thunderbird where I can do it if you want. So Dave Lee says, oh no, it's the same. Oh, sorry.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah.
I can't operate my own podcast, he says. One word in HTML. Yeah, great.
I really wish
Dave, could you stop sending text. HTML only? Send both, like everybody else does.
Yes.
Let's see. And Jerome Batten, hi, I would vote for a definite no on this one. Let me explain. Currently, the hosts are all a bunch of people that would show up in a Venn diagram in the nerdy, geek, techie section. Becoming a platform would open the site up to a much wider group of people. No doubt amongst people with good intentions, also less likable characters. Think of influencers, people selling disinformation, ultra-right, left and middle included here for completeness. This also means all these other podcasts need to be reviewed, and there need to be rules and consequently enforcement of said rules. If I look back and see what happens when somebody peddles the anti-pandemic stuff, I am getting really reluctant at endorsing becoming a platform. My two cents on the matter. Warm greetings and salutation to my fellow hackers, Jerome Batten.
And Kevin says, well, if we're moving from the positive to the normative, I would say we should remain a podcast.
And I added my two cents. I feel we should be a podcast and should maintain the same policy towards accepting and airing shows from other podcasts that we currently have, as long as they meet the requirements of posting on HPR, i.e. shows of any topic that are of interest to hackers. They post on the accepted schedule, currently not more than once every 2 weeks, if I'm not mistaken. The show can be posted under the same CC license that HPR uses. They are generally not a disruptive member of the community. The gray areas when a podcast is wholly hosted through HPR versus playing an episode from one which is hosted elsewhere. I think we asked the host to give a brief summary of an external podcast being aired on HPR at the start of the show, before including the external material. For podcasts which air regularly or wholly hosted on HPR, the summary isn't requested. So far, I don't feel like anyone hosting their podcast on HPR has abused the spirit of posting to HPR. For me, the connotation of a podcast hosting platform means either some kind of monetization going on in the background or some kind of sharing of resources between the podcasts. And I'm not sure how that would look and work for HPR as is currently structured. I doubt Josh and anhonesthost.net would mind some extra capital coming in to offset HPR resources they graciously give to HPR, but it would be a completely new dynamic that would need to be worked out. If we went that route, I see a hacker public network or a hacker public broadcasting network to which HPR would then become a part of that network, but HPR would basically be the same. Cheers, Ron.
And I replied to anyone hosting their podcast on HPR abusing Dispersion. Agreed. I don't think anyone has entered into this. I think everybody has entered this into good faith. HPR can operate as either a podcast or a podcast hosting platform, but I would like to see the distinction. What bit? Sorry. Where did you hear the first part of that?
Yes.
Okay, and then the second part is, first, there is no guarantee or suggestion that the money will be flowing into the podcast hosting platform, or sponsored deals entered into but podcasts on a podcast hosting platform. There's nothing to suggest that any of the money will flow to the podcast hosting platform's coffers. In fact, YouTube, Facebook, etc. are expected to pay their content providers. Anyway, when money gets involved, we get a whole other layer of bureaucracy and oversight. And I would much prefer to have nothing to do with. If you want to contribute, you send your donation to josh@anhonesthost.com or the Internet Archive. When the HPR needs stuff, the community usually provides. As far as needing a podcast hosting platform, there already is one, and that is the Internet Archive. They already provide an API, and they provide hosting for us and many other Creative Commons podcasts as well. In fact, that is where HPR shows have gone live are hosted. So what value would hosting on HPR provide? To which you replied?
I replied, let's see, so and earned the good
I'll page. Get a coffee while that's going on.
From my point of view, we keep the same direction. A podcast that happens to allow other podcasts to post their episodes in our feed. By direction, do you mean the same, or is that the question about direction? Allowing other shows to host themselves through HBR feed. And then in response to your talking about money and things, donating to Josh and then I said, I didn't state it, but I agree. It is another whole level of complexity that is not worth the effort. And then in response to, as far as needing a podcasting host platform, there already is one, and that is the Internet Archive. And the value of hosting on us, I say the value of hosting your shows on HPR, at least initially, is a fairly large audience with presumably similar interest is introduced to your content. Well, I maybe should have read out everything since Ken is now getting coffee.
Again, Roan, I would have gotten away with it too if it wasn't for truncated silence.
Sorry, I'm bad with truncating silence.
I think I replied next. Okay, yeah. Apologies, I misunderstood your point. Well, doesn't that make us syndicated shows? We're only releasing stuff for HPR. We put a rule in that other podcasts sought to post on HPR to gain audience, and we started having no free slots for HPR-only content. Over the years, we stopped a lot of podcasts from airing on HPR because of the rule, but we didn't. But what's to stop them hosting on HPR instead and bypassing this rule?
And to this I replied, and this is in response to your apologies for misunderstanding the point. I said, no worries. I should have stated that at first. My position was not well implied in my response. And then to your point of being a syndication and the rules on syndication, I replied, I didn't realize that was an issue. While I've recently worked with the syndication page, I obviously haven't read it thoroughly. How is this decided currently, whether a podcast can post through HPR or not? Is it on a case-by-case decision through the mailing list?
And I say, usually it's clear cut. If somebody has their own podcast with their own site and their own feed, then they are a syndicated show. None of these things were in place when in-laws posted their first show. However, I did send them this email. Guys, are you planning to, this was the first email I said, are you planning to release exclusively on HPR? Or are you planning on hosting your own podcast? If the former, then no problem. If you're planning your own show, then I'm posting a sample episode under the rules, stuff you need to know syndication. And if you're doing your own show, they would be happy to add you to the freeculturepodcasts.org list. And I also said in response, I think, or are you planning to host your own platform is what's causing the confusion. I can imagine that if you thought HPR was a podcast hosting platform, you might think that the syndication rule didn't apply. As it turns out, that wasn't correct. But that'll become obvious later on. And
I just switched to that one.
Go.
It's the one that says, in relation to syndication and the in-laws, that's interesting, says Dave Lee. I thought the syndication rule was in place well before then.
Yes, the rule was there, but they didn't have a website at the time. But actually, that wasn't what happened again.
So Dave says, sorry, I completely misread it.
Do you want to do D&T's role?
Okay. D&T replies, honestly, I think the idea that HPR would be a podcast hosting platform has no basis on anything. It's largely a self-serving misconception for those who use it as one. Probably no one is really upset about the in-laws posting their shows as HPR shows. They clearly fit in, and it's good to fill a slot. I see this like there's been kind of a symbiotic relationship, and then they misrepresented this relationship, which has put HPR in a slightly uncomfortable position. It shouldn't change just to get comfortable again. HPR should just reiterate that it's not a podcast hosting platform, but rather a podcast, and that as far as it's concerned, Linux In-Laws is a series within HPR as are others.
And I replied, to give you some background, the decision to only release material created exclusively for HPR was taken on the mailing list, but it was a hard decision to make and even harder to implement. This is in 2012 in October. At the time, we had to drop 3 shows from the podcast, and we've turned away 20 different podcasts since then. We started freeculturepodcast.org, where we have the podcast recommendation series, in order to lighten the message we're giving in having to turn people away. It sucks turning these shows away, especially when you had to call for shows open. Thankfully, most of these shows remain friends and understand the reasons for the decision. We're grateful for the publicity we could provide, and many went on to be HPR contributors, supplying shows and staffing the HPR booths. While there may have been doubts to start with, the Linux In-Laws now definitely qualifies as a syndicated show. So again, that's not correct, but okay. We have rules that were agreed after a fair bit of thought and discussion in the community. But the In-Laws are now outside of those rules and puts us in a difficult position, whether we arrived at it by accident or not. So to me, at least, it's rather more than putting HPR into a slightly uncomfortable position. It calls into question the impartiality with which the rules are applied. I need an answer to the question, why are they allowed to be on HPR and Podcast X isn't? And right now, I don't have one.
Ooh, one I can read. Josh says, if a series that has been on HBR turns into its own podcast, that's cool. But that should mean that it can stand on its own 2 feet and doesn't require to be syndicated on HBR. It doesn't stop them from going and doing a short podcast here, covering the highlight of the other podcasts. It isn't so much giving them the boot as it is making sure the podcast stays within the rules the community has defined.
Yeah. And Josh is the one who's paying for the hosting, so we do need to consider his words very carefully. So, 2 more from me. So, Hi all, I just want to summarize the topic as to my understanding of the current situation. I don't think there is a need to amend... Oh yeah, well, that's actually... How is this... Where did Yannick's email come? Because none of this means that makes any sense.
I see, in fact, if you look in the thread, it sort of jumped back to Linux in-laws and HPR.
How did Todd reply to that? Okay, I'll do another one and figure it out from there.
I have Todd's up. If you
okay, I'll do mine and then you do Todd's. The HPR syndication policy was designed to stop podcasts from monopolizing slots in the HPR. Question one. What would it take to get the Linux in-laws into compliance with the... Hold on, that's a response to who's... Todd wrote, question one. Okay, you do Todd's, please. Hold on. First, I think I need to... Right.
Because his... I have Todd's, and it does have the questions.
Yeah, but I posted the email that I sent to the in-laws. Hold on 1 second. This is all out of order. So if you open up Todd's one, there's all gov nested emails in there.
Yes.
So let's read that from the bottom and then work our way up.
Okay.
So I contacted, God, how am I going to read this?
So would that be from your one from, it says on Wednesday, August 17th, and you're saying, you're showing with permission, I am posting the email and my response to the Linux inlet.
Okay, yeah. So, hi lads. As I think you are aware, yeah, that's it. A discussion being carried out on the mailing list following my request for clarity as to the nature of HPR. The community is of the opinion that we are not a podcast hosting platform. And we do not host podcasts. All our series are considered to be episodes that are part of the HPR podcast. This puts your show at odds with the rule of only releasing material exclusively for HPR. As we have applied this rule to a lot of podcasts, we cannot make an exception here. So if you wish to continue to post to HPR, then you need to ensure the content is produced exclusively for HPR. If you decide not to follow this path, then your future episodes will need to be hosted elsewhere. As you are a Creative Commons podcast, then you can, then the Internet Archive would seem to be a logical place to host the shows. We are obviously willing to assist with the transition, and we can also add you to the show. To the show page on freeculturepodcast.org, which by default gets you exposure at any of the fests that our contributors attend. We can also send out notices to other people to let them know who maintain podcasts, Floss podcast lists. Given a lot of people are subscribing to your RSS feed, we can hard code a redirect to the in-laws feed that they're maintaining over at inlaws_rss.xml on linuxinlaws.eu. If you want to subscribe, now's your chance. And that way you don't lose any dedicated subscribers. We would also remind people to add their feed in the upcoming community news. I know this is not great news for you, but I'm not enjoying being the messenger. Okay, well, tell me what you decide. And as always, you can bypass us and bring us up on the mailing list, or you can contact a small group of auditors to discuss it privately with them. And then you can probably do the in-laws.
Okay. So the in-laws wrote, "Hi Ken, we certainly followed the discussion on the mailing list with growing disbelief, to be honest, and as yet have not commented. As Linux in-laws, we applaud the democratic approach by listening to the community. At the same time, we have to ask ourselves, can a handful of people commenting on a mailing be considered the whole community? As you well know, the silent majority tend not to comment on mailing lists. That being said, we also need to look at the actual arguments being made. HBR is not a podcasting platform and doesn't allow syndication. We fully agree and comply with this. As far as Linux in-laws are concerned, we are a series on HBR, just like many others. To argue the case, all our content is exclusively produced for and released on HBR. Yes, we have a website, but the same can be said for many serial content producers on HBR. Website is supporting only and does not host our recordings. Our setup and the way we publish material has been the same from the start, so why this sudden change of direction for HBR? We feel rather singled out in this discussion and consider us no different to other series producers on HBR. More than happy to discuss, we greatly appreciate HBR and would prefer to remain a part of it. Martin and Chris.
My response to the point are as follows. About the handful of people, about the mailing list. Governance. I give a link to our about page in the section governance. These emails are also brought to the attention of the entire community every first Monday of the month in the community news show. You're listening to it live. There, the community in its entirety can and do provide comments. Any proposal on improvements are welcome. And then to their point about the website. Yes, we have a website, but the same can be said of many serial content producers on HPR. And I said, please give me an example of the show or series on HPR that has its own intro and outro, operates its own website, has its own feed that posts shows prior to them being aired on HPR. They will also qualify as a syndicated show and will be treated according to the same rules. In response to our setup that we publish material has been the same since the start. We made you aware of this in the welcome email I sent to new hosts and about syndication, etc. And why the sudden change in direction? And I replied, because of your statement in the show 3649. Where he says, if we take a look at archive.org for the last year and a half, we clock in, since we lost this podcast short of 2.5 years ago, is quite amazing. Therefore, you consider yourselves a podcast and HPR to be a podcast hosting platform from your perspective. And all our content is produced for HPR, I said, and yet the website says all episodes are hosted on HPR. We feel rather, in response to, we feel rather singled out in the discussion, consider us no different from other series. I reply, I am very sorry that you feel that way, but you're not the first and you won't be the last podcast to have the rules applied. At the time, we have had to drop 3 different shows from the podcast and turned away 20 different podcasts since then. I can be assured you that we would have preferred to have dealt with this at the beginning. Now you can do Norris's reply.
Okay. Norris replies, I have a few questions about the syndication policy. Hopefully I'm not overcomplicating the issue. Question 1. What would it take to get the Linux in-laws into compliance with the HBR syndication policy? The biggest issue I see is the separate Linux in-laws feeds with unpublished HBR episodes. What if they replace their feed with the HBR series feed? Question 2. Is a HBR host having a separate website to promote their HBR episodes okay? And question 3. Many HPR episodes are audio versions of a web page previously published by the host. Does an audio version of an existing web page, verbatim or summarized, meet the requirement of material created exclusively for HPR?
So I reply, the HPR syndication policy was designed to stop other podcasts from monopolizing slots in HPR. So in response to question 1, stop being a podcast, start posting shows. Consider shows from Tlatu or Nightwise. Do you have any difficulty knowing if their shows were intended for HPR or if they were from their own podcasts? In response to question 2, having a separate website and promoting on HPR, the answer is yes, of course. Have a look at Ahuka, Zwielink Hacker Public Radio. In fact, when he submits a show or posts there, we see several hundred redirects from his site to HPR. Question 3. Does the audio version extend web page, etc.? Does that meet the requirements of material created exclusively for HPR? Probably not, because it is content. Does the audio version of an existing web page meet the requirements of material created exclusively for HPR? Probably not. It is their content and they are creating new medium from HPR. take the DOS series that was posted years ago, but the shows were recorded for his HPR. However, it will be done on a case-by-case basis. The biggest issue he sees is separate feed. I replied, no, that's not the biggest issue. The biggest issue is that we've been turning other podcasts away with the same reasons that we turned the Linux in-laws. We do not syndicate podcasts on HPR, so is the Linux in-laws a podcast? It's, to use the saying, if it looks like a duck, walks like a duck, and quacks like a duck, it's a duck. Okay, and actually, what I'm not even sure I'm coming across here what the issue was, even rereading this, even though it didn't apply here. But if we say somebody can host on HPR, you could take, Klaatu's show, the GNU World Order, and he could post all his shows on HPR and then maintain his own feed pointing to the Internet Archive or shows on HPR. And that would conform to the rules in paper, on paper. But yeah, don't know if you get what I'm meaning, why there's an issue with this.
Argument
that the in-laws made there about that they're a series and that they're hosting on HPR, you know, everything is pointing to HPR. Even if we accepted that argument, we could have all the other podcasts do exactly the same thing, just publish their regular show onto our feed, onto via the HPR website. That's what the whole syndicated rule was about. Okay, and this is the Yannick one, which is classic. Gosh, and this is why I owe Yannick a beer. Yannick says, gosh, I didn't think anything would break my silence, but I have to. I'm not the sort of guy to say I told you so, but ... On Thursday, February the 13th, at 4:40 PST 2020, that's 2.5 years ago, I wrote an email titled HPR 3009, in which I said, I'm writing you today because I am concerned about episode 3009. This seems to me to be a clear case of syndication. First, the title, Linux In-Laws Season 1, Episode 1, and then the fact that there's no mention of HPR at all in the show. The whole thing is there, and the link. I stand by my position. The Linux In-Laws in its current form has no business on HPR. And then in brackets, oh, well, I better go to it for now. I told you so. Anyway, back to being silent. Yannick, the French guy from Switzerland. Now, this is what I had completely forgotten to do and maintain and manage.
Yes. that was amazing, like, when I read that one.
So, thanks, Yannick, I replied. I had completely forgotten this thread. Link in the show notes. Then I was at the stand at Fostem and I spoke to Chris and it became clear that their website and feed were not active. So they are posting exclusively to HPR. So we are bootstrapping their show for them. Once they have everything ready, they will move their show to their own feeds and become their own on Free Culture Podcasts site. Do Jason's, please. Jason.
I missed most of this because work is beating me down, but it has always appeared to me that Linux In-Laws was made for HPR so far.
I've just woken up. Shall I do this next one? Sam Bong, who says, I feel it is how one represents themselves. An episode of for HPR or a podcast hosted on HPR. I agree with the policy current. HPR is not a host in my view. It's signed by Brian.
And I reply, I totally agree. They were intended to be hosted on HPR for now. To be honest, I don't think they even knew HPR was anything other than a podcast hosting platform based on listening to episode 3649, 20 years in review. I was the first to make the distinction between podcast and podcast hosting platform in my response show, and I made it clear in their what they consider to be a podcast hosting platform. In this episode, our two aging thingies called Hacker Public Radio, yes, the platform that the Inix in-laws have been using since its very inception of this rapidly growing Floss podcast content. That's why I asked the email list, are we a podcast hosting platform? If we were, then there would be some justification for them to continue here. As they are not, then there isn't.
Okay, shall I do Jason Dodd? He says, I'm confused. One of my unrealized goals is to create at least one show a week, naming them with some catchy name plus an incrementing number, posting them exclusively to HPR. That seems to be what Linux in-laws have been doing. Is the thinking I can't do that because HPR is not a podcast hosting platform?
Let's see. Kevin O'Brien says, I would think there are two problems here, potentially. First, if your plan amounts to having HPR host your own podcast, obviously that is wrong. But we also ask that people do not post more than once every 2 weeks. You may note that I have adhered to this pretty strictly unless there is an emergency of low shows. And even then, I check with the janitors first to see if they want the added show. Having a series on HPR is not a problem, but I think we do that by topic. I have started several series here, but I've always made it clear that I don't own the topic, and everyone else is free to contribute. To me, the ethos of HPR is that it is a collective in which group members contribute. And to be clear, all of the above is my personal opinion, which others are free to disregard with regards.
Jason says, then I suppose I'll stop with the shows that I do have recorded but haven't uploaded. I consider the few shows I've done now my irregular podcast that's posted to HPR. And he says, we also have people do not post more than once every 2 weeks. That's true. I was being a bit optimistic. A show every 2 months from me would be downright impressive. And Hook says that it's his personal opinion, what he said. I guess it's a distinction without a difference to me. A series on HPR is the same as a podcast on a specific topic only hosted on HPR. This discussion has been informative. I now know what I plan to do wouldn't be appropriate for HPR. Fortunately, what I'm doing is perfectly suitable for HPR, listening and continuing to procrastinate on sitting down to record a show every two or 3 weeks.
And I reply, it takes very little to run your own podcast nowadays. Create an account on the Internet Archive, upload your media there, create a small RSS file on your own domain which points to the media on the Internet Archive, and you're done. You can help you if you run into problems and advise you how you can increase your exposure. And there's about a series on HPR is the same as a podcast on a specific topic only hosted on HPR. HPR tag is an ad hoc grouping of a show's on the topic. A HPR series tends to be open to multiple hosts on a defining group around the topic. For example, there's 50 on how I got into tech, there's 44 interviews, there's 34 what's in my toolkit, and 20 in privacy and security, etc.
So X1101, replying to Jason Todd on, I guess it's a distinction without a difference to me. I disagree. There's a very clear difference. I would be welcome, nay encouraged, to add shows to the DOS, GIMP, Security and Privacy, or any of the other fantastic series that Kevin has started / contributed to over the years. I don't think the same would be considered true for Linux in-laws. Interesting, the host of URandom, myself, Taj Pokey, had a discussion about this when we decided that we couldn't maintain our audio book club schedule, but still wanted to do a show. One discussed option was to do a few HPR exclusive episodes to work out the bugs and then host it ourselves, because the policy has always been clear about the difference between an HPR series and a syndicated podcast / episode. We didn't do this because we found other ways to approach it. Policy is clear, and this has absolutely slid into a clear violation of the policy.
And Claudio says, hi, everybody. I've been following this email thread for quite a while, but haven't said much of anything, but I am in agreement HPR is a podcast and not a podcasting hosting platform. The reason being as follows. There used to be a couple of guys who started on HPR, the Alien Brothers podcast. They had a number of episodes on HPR, but the eventual intent, if I'm not mistaken, was to move away from the HPR host and host their podcasts on their own. They were merely using HBR as a launch pad for their own podcast to garner some listeners. Eventually, they did move on to their own feed for their podcast, but sadly, it pot faded. Some of their HBR episodes are still available via the archive, so there should be given. So that should give HBR enough backing regarding the situation. Anyway, that's my two cents on the matter.
I can read Christoph's ones. Dear community, first of all, the in-laws would like to thank the HBR community for their feedback over the years and especially the last few days. Ken is, of course, right in pointing out the bootstrapping argument in Wednesday's reply to Yannick's mail, though we never really defined how long this bootstrapping period would last. In addition to the above, the assessment of the situation in our mail from Wednesday, republished in Ken's mail, the situation from an in-law's perspective hasn't changed since we published our first episode in the early 2020. The content is published exclusively on HPR and our RSS feed points to HPR only. Having said that, I cannot get rid of that sinking feeling that HPR and its community shy away from success. If Ken's analysis published recently, reference one, is anything to go by, we are one of HPR's most popular podcasts which regularly publishes content. In addition to the fact that we are syndicated left, right, and center without any involvement of our own, as we found out a while ago, there's, for an example, a YouTube channel republishing the audio content and giving HPR credit. But let's take a look at the bigger picture. If our experience, never mind the feedback we are getting through official and other channels, are anything to go by, the vast majority of our listeners couldn't care less where they get their episodes from. They heard or read about the podcast, search for the RSS feed, subscribe to it, and if they like what they hear, download from a server, they stick with us. End of story. In this light, any discussion about wording, podcast versus hosting platforms, etc., is academic and thus irrelevant for these listeners. Playing devil's advocates for the above, of course, never mind ignoring bylaws, etc. Smiley face. Of course, bylaws are bylaws, and feelings that we may have overstayed are welcome. We are happy to move the content elsewhere, probably archive.org as suggested by Ken, which also has the side effect of reducing the technical debt of the corresponding automation workflow significantly. But do so with a bittersweet feeling, as we do believe in the true spirit of the FLOSS communities and their welcoming, inclusive attitude. Thus, having made every effort to promote HPR and its cause as part of the episodes and elsewhere, which is in stark contrast to the wording of some of the comments posted to the HPR mailing list over the last couple days. On an interesting side note, HPR seems to be actively soliciting podcasts from other platforms if, for example, the case of Grumpy Old Coders is anything to go by. In its most recent episode, David speaks about HPR having reached out to them, trying to move them over to HPR. Given the fact that this format is hosted on a proprietary platform, SoundCloud, with their format exhibiting far more restrictive aspects. For example, they publish their content under All Rights Reserved license in contrast to CC BY-SA as preferred by HPR. And knowing David, the producer of this format, quite well as he has been one of my colleagues for the last years, it would surprise me if such an endeavor would prove successful. Never mind the above, the in-laws would like to thank HBR for having us for the last 2.5 years and wish this platform, our word, smiley face, every possible success for the future. But it may help in order to avoid similar incidents in the future to be clear about syndication, never mind what the difference is between a show, a series, and a podcast as far as HPR is concerned. As the wording in reference 4 is somewhat terse, and then they have their references listed.
Yeah. And I reply, hi, Christopher. While you're entitled to your opinions, I do need to correct you on a few inaccuracies in your mail regarding if Ken's analysis published is anything to go by, where HBR's most popular podcast. What I didn't include in the analysis was the 170 additional subscribers that you get to your own feed. As no one else promotes their own HPR subscribers, we need to subtract that from the download figures to be fair to the other shows. So the first day release numbers of the show mostly averaging 700, between 726 and 753. That would make their first download 583. Regarding the YouTube channel content and giving HPR credit, I can't see that they're assigning credit or even the flagging the content as Creative Commons, unless you mean in the audio stream itself, which was created by HPR, and I gave a YouTube DL JSON download dump where I confirmed that there is no mention of Hacker Public Radio or Hacker Indeed or HPR or the word Creative Commons. Regard, David speaks about HPR having reached out to try and move them over. The statement is not correct, and I would appreciate it if you could contact Dave and correct his understanding. Fortunately, the entire conversation is publicly on Twitter. Have you ever considered releasing your content as Creative Commons? We promote shows both on HPR and also on freeculturepodcast.org. For both, we would need to have your RSS feed, or you don't qualify as a podcast. Somebody do
X1101. See this right here, he says, referring to looks at in-laws seg there, one of HPR's most popular podcasts. See this right here is exactly the disconnect. HPR is one podcast. Simply cannot be one of HPR's most popular podcasts because brackets one is not a competition, and more importantly, two, HPR is a single podcast. Then in relation to the RSS feed and the similar arguments, sure, fine, whatever. That's not really relevant to the questions at hand one way or the other. And if it were, very much points to you using HPR as something that we, the broader HPR community, have decided that it is not a platform to host your own podcast from. And then in this light, any discussion about wording podcasts versus hosting platforms, etc., is academic in the original. X1101 says, maybe, but they aren't onto us. And the comment about bylaws are bylaws. I do want to point out that that was not the only option presented. And regarding reducing the technical debt of corresponding automation workflow significantly, meaning archive.org is easier to drive than HPR is, there is absolutely no call for this kind of backhanded comment. The HPR admins stroke janitors have consistently worked to improve the tooling of the site to support the HPR workflow while keeping everything that already exists functional as it is. This is one of the worst sour grapes examples I've seen in a long time and really belittles the work they do. To circle back to one more point, he says, having said that I cannot get rid of that sinking feeling that HPR and its community shy away from a success. No. Says X1101, I think we define success differently, speaking personally. If the success of any one HPR series doesn't translate into success for the community as a whole, then it's not really success for HPR. Having said all that, I still wish you the best of luck going forward. I hope that this is nothing more than an honest disagreement between a group of well-meaning folks.
And DNT says, it's good because of this. No one will be able to question whether listeners are your own or HPR's, making any claims of success irrefutable. Perhaps you're right that HPR has tended to shy away from success in those 17 years. Jokes aside, I do enjoy your shows and appreciate your work to feature guests we want to hear from. So I look forward to subscribing to your feed and continuing to listen. Now, for the things pertaining to HPR that we have talked about here, I think considering how easy it is to have your own CC licensed podcast by hosting it on the IA, and how well such prospective podcasters can be expected to host an RSS feed to point to the audio files, it seems likely the only really good reason to slot one's podcast into the HPR feed is to access HPR listeners. Then the question for the community should be, do we want to sample new podcasts within the HBR feed? For me, the answer would tend to be no, because again, I think we should always keep the focus on attracting new contributors. It's what sets HBR apart, and it's the principle that should guide every decision without exception. It's the diversity of voices and experiences of people who wouldn't be otherwise a podcaster. If someone can argue that this would help convince listeners to become contributors, then we should talk about it. For me, a new podcast host or hosts wanting to gain subscribers can send a regular HBO show and tell us how that if we like their vibe, they're started their own podcast, we can subscribe to, as Tlatu has done. Those who like it will follow.
And Carl Hyman replies, let's see, to DNT's comment on focusing on attracting new contributors, what sets HBR apart. This is what the HBR community has defined as success. More contributors, not more listeners. Not more episodes per contributor. Granted, more listeners can be a means to that end, but probably not if those listeners couldn't care less where they get their episodes from. I've enjoyed the handful of the In-Laws episodes I've listened to, but I think our goals just aren't aligned. If HBR carried, as though it were a network, 10 twice-monthly podcasts, there would be no slots left open for new contributors. That's the reason the current policy exists, and we should seek to apply it equitably. I appreciate Ken's offer about aiding in a smooth transitioner for listeners who have come to Linux In-Laws via HBR, and I hope that sentiment makes the intent clear. This is not a banishment, but rather an acknowledgement that you've outgrown us. Struggling to communicate clearly from a French keyboard because I am too lazy to change it. Pleasant Lane there.
And Kevin says, I completely agree. We need more hosts who are part of HPR.
And Brian Navarette, who is Brian in Ohio, says, goodbye, In-Laws. You'll never be as good as the Outlaws. No jokes aside.
Ooh, that burned. That burned. Let me see.
I think that was the end, unless there's another thread.
No, we have to go back to the very first one where I give the sum. No, there was more. Or was it later on?
Maybe it was next month.
Well, I better cover it now because I don't want to go back to this. Are you sure? I don't see anything in...
Yeah, I think we managed to cover them all.
No, because I've replied. I've replied to that with an apology, actually.
Did it go to the list? Maybe not.
Yeah.
So your message of the 22nd, Ken, which was sent in reply to... Monochromic and to the list. So is that the one, or is it another mailing list?
No, it's somewhere else. Yeah, it was because I sent it in the middle of the night at 4 o'clock in the morning. Remember that one?
That went to the admin list. At least I've got. Oh no, it went. Hang on. It's on the admin list. I think the one you're thinking of.
Did it go to the admin list? Did it not go to the mailing list?
On the 20th of August, to the admin list, with the reply from Christoph.
Oh, I didn't. Did I not send it? Oh, that should have gone to everybody. Right, send it to everybody now. Okay. I'll read it now, even though it's covered in next month's. Too long didn't read. Ken wakes up to find out that he is wrong again and owes the Linux In-Laws an apology. Hi, all. I've had some time to stand back and think about how I've handled this situation, and I owe the Linux In-Laws an apology. As they stated several times, from their point of view, nothing has changed since joining HBR. They still believed and believe HBR to be a podcast hosting platform that they have used in good faith. I now see that in that light, they have done all that was asked of them and more. In forgetting that we were bootstrapping their podcast and getting frustrated at their apparent flouting of the syndication rule, I have done HPR and the Linux In-Laws a disservice. They have not done anything wrong. I would like to apologize to all concerned. Unfortunately, as I have spent so much effort putting HPR, proving HPR is not a podcast hosting platform, I am now left with the problem of dealing with a Floss podcast without a home. This is not a good look, and it is exactly the opposite of what I was trying to achieve. The in-laws will need some time to transition to their own site. Their schedule is recorded several months in advance, so they will need some time to migrate in an orderly fashion. The move to a new hosting would need to be ironed out, as well as notifying their listeners as to the change that is happening. And we need to make sure that the feeds redirect automatically. I would like to ask the HPR community's tolerance for this exception for a period of, say, 6 months, so that we can round season one off here in good order. And I hope the extra time will give them the opportunity to mend some fences. Suffice to say, I owe Martin, Chris, and indeed Yannick some beers at Fosdem for this mess. And I'll do the replies from Chris as well, because it makes sense. Hi, Ken, HPR admins. No worries. We would like to thank HPR for having us for the last 2.5 years. And remember that once the in-laws have reached their ultimate goal, world domination, until then, the second 10 beers are on us when we meet again at the next Fosdem or whatever. Let's take the technical transition or RSS feed offline, and Chris will be in touch via the HPR mailing list shortly. Okay, do you get all that? And I know that may seem strange to people, but when I sat down and talked about it from the in-laws' point of view, they consider us to be HPR to be a podcast hosting platform. And from that perspective, they were bootstrapping their show. Admittedly, 2.5 years is a long boot up process, but that said, that's just the way it is.
I never got the feeling that they were working from, you know, a dishonest position. I think, they just were, and it sucks that it got to this point, and that the mailing list did get a little heated at times. But I think, Ken, you've done a great job. I know you've probably kicking yourself every time you think about it, but you've handled it well. They've been very gracious in dealing, with the change. And I think, that response, it would have been nice to see it on the mailing list, because it did sort of all of a sudden, although I do remember you saying something about at some point them being, at least the next couple shows being hosted. I don't remember where I heard that, but I do remember hearing or reading that somewhere. So,
my defense was 4 a.m. and I typed the wrong emails.
Yeah, no, it happens. But I think that's, it's a fair resolution to the situation. They weren't everybody's cup of tea, but I think it's good to keep the fences as mended as much as we can, and I think it's good that we're helping them transition, and everything I'm sure you've had to go do to make it possible. So not a great situation, but I think it'll overall, I think in the long run it'll all be good.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I should have kept track of if we were doing a bootstrap thing, should have kept track of that. And then, 3 shows in and their website is up and their RSS feed is on, I should have contacted them to ask them, what the plan was. But anyway, that's the problem, Yannick. You should have reminded me. I blame Yannick. Let's all blame Yannick.
We could do with some sort of a leaflet or something for dealing with that type of situation. We'd like you to bootstrap via HPR, or if you would like to do that, then you were open to it. But here are the ground rules.
I don't think we'll do that again. Right now, what I would do is it's so easy to post to the Internet Archive now.
True enough. Very true.
And if somebody doesn't have the money for their own domain, we can see about getting them their own domain, and asking somebody to sponsor it for a year or whatever. Because there's no benefit in going via HPR. Well, there is. You get you and I, you get me transcoding the shows, and you get you doing the grammar check and the show notes and everything in order, and you get that whole thing. But unless it's a HBR episode, I really don't want to be spending that effort on it. Granted, with a Free Culture Podcast website, we do contact those sites if they've got anything wrong with their XML file or stuff like that to help them out. So we will help shows. That's what we're here to do. But our going via HBR doesn't add any value, because it also is restrictive. You know how frustrated the in-laws guys were with the not being able to automate the uploads? And now I can completely see, you know, I was just looking at the amount of support requests that we had was by far more coming from the in-laws guys than anybody else. And I can completely see why now, because your podcast hosting platform, yet you're not making it easy for us to host our podcast in your platform. And we're going, but you're HBR, you're part of the HBR. Yeah, but your podcast hosting platform. So I can, you know, 4 o'clock in the morning, woke up, and I completely realized why they're so frustrated with the whole thing. But, you know, and to me, I always had the feeling, we had this discussion, well, why don't they just post? They want to automate so badly. Why don't you just go to the Internet Archive? And they're going, but to them, we are the Internet Archive. You know, we're just a way of hosting via. And 2.5 years ago, it was a lot harder to post to the Internet Archive.
Yes. It was getting better at that point in my experience, but it was not very well documented and that type of thing. So, yeah. But they do have tools where you can just say, here's my show, here's all the stuff, here's all the files, put it up on the IA, and you can do it from your own machine if you have the authentication, et cetera, et cetera. So it has become very easy. So good. Yeah.
And Jason Dodd just replied going, the whole thing has moved me firmly into the listener side of the house. If Linux in Laws isn't for HBR, none of my content would be. Yep. And that brings me back to the question, if you're running your own podcast like Klaatu, for instance, how does Klaatu work? Well, I have lots of questions for Klaatu. Klaatu should come to FOSDEM, by the way, just as by the by. We're already got him at 0.5% chance that he will be there, folks. So if you encourage him, send an email to Klaatu at whatever his email address is now, and tell him to come to FOSDEM. That's a by the by. How does he decide what show goes to the New World Order and what show goes to HPR? That's an interesting topic, actually. That would be a show in itself.
Yeah, sure.
But would it go on New World Order, or would it go to HPR?
Yeah. And the frustrating thing is I hear a tattoo show and I go, okay, where is it? I really hope it's on HPR, because then the show notes are going to be better. Sorry, that's a dig at Dave forcing everybody to have show notes.
Show notes are important.
Look at some of the show notes we've looked at today. Wow.
Oh, yeah.
I think it makes my point.
Yeah, it does. They're for accessibility reasons. I mean, you can go into it 100,000 times. If you do go to GNU World Order, it is very difficult to find the episodes with just a one-liner. Sometimes he doesn't even have in that he discussed an entire topic. Makes it frustrating to find.
Yes, I know. I enjoy the topics that he covers, but I have on occasion gone, what was that thing again? I will never know unless I listen to the show again.
Actually, what we need to do is we need to have H.P. Lovecraft go over and do all his shows.
It's going to require some cash fairly soon, yeah. I suspect.
Okay, have we flogged this one to death? This is going to be a 2-hour show.
Seems quite flogged from my perspective.
Okay, well, hopefully we won't have to deal with any of the fallout from that. But we have the redirects in place, and, well, not in place yet until they're done, but we have a test redirect in place that should work. And then we need to pimp their show so that people subscribe to their podcast. Mm-hmm. And all should be good. Any other business, Dave?
There was the there were two AOB things. One was the Gitty repository that we're using on an honest host. It requires people to log in to view the repositories, and Josh is very keen that that would be the case. He doesn't want anonymous access to it. So are we happy with that, or do we want to move the code elsewhere? That's the question.
Yeah, that is the question, and we're putting it here because the community needs to decide. My personal opinion is to have an account would make sense.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it means you could potentially upgrade to being a contributor more easily. I thought.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. The other subject. Oh, sorry. Had you?
Well, just on that as well, because it means that at some day we might go to submitting your shows via a pull request or something up there. And Rowan will have to explain to me how this all works, because he seems to be using the site as it was intended, and I'm not able to do that. So call for shows there, Rowan. Can you record how to use GitLab?
I can.
Thanks.
Do...
Thanks, good lad. Excellent. I'll add that to my Osmia show document.
Okay. So
I cut you off there. Please go on.
No, it was just to say the re-upload stuff is still progressing. I got so fed up with fiddling around with the numbers to give an update each month, I just turned it into a table, which just gets pulled out of the database. Saves me a lot less a lot of work. So we've done 155 this month, and there's 828 to go.
No, that's not bad. Sorry, Rowan, I cut you off there about doing the show, or about using GitLab, Git T.
Oh, no, yeah, I can. That is a good idea. I hadn't really thought about that. I don't know what other I had. I could definitely see needing, and I understand. I mean, it's Josh's prerogative as far as like needing that. It's just I'm afraid that some people aren't just gonna like go and glance at it. I don't know. Some, you know, it's like, do you allow read only for the public and not? But anyway, that's another thing. We could always have a copy of it running somewhere and just, you know, say if you want to participate, come to the actual thing, and I could maintain, you know, keeping them synchronized. But anyway, not a big deal. It's fine the way it is. But I do encourage people, please just go sign up, take a look at the code, give us some feedback. It would be a big help. Keep my encouragement up.
Yeah. I think, but on the repo, you can actually log in with a GitLab or a Google account or an OpenID or something like that. So you don't have to physically create a new account. You can just extend your credentials over there. So it's not that big a deal. But I get your point. We should probably make a version of the code, you know, just have it on the website or something.
Yeah.
We should probably talk to Popey about this, because it's his fault we're doing this in the first place.
And not to extend it, maybe I'll just post this either to you or I'm just thinking, because I thought at one point you had said you wanted to have, like, instead of using like rsync, basically a Git of the whole website, and then you would just like do a pull to get everything.
Well, for the code, you would do pull down the repo, and then you get access to your code and everything's hunky-dory there. For the website, and then you could generate your own copy of the website if you wanted. Or you publish it to an rsync site, and then we can set up an rsync from there that people can rsync the entire thing.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, both. So that's what it's not mutually exclusive. I'm on both.
Okay.
I want it now.
Okay. Well, we'll talk offline about publishing them to public hacker radio.
Yeah. Hobby public radio, which is the... Yeah. The hobby public radio, that will be another one as well. Probably appropriate, given our... But we also have a think about how one would post shows via Git. Have a think about that. People having ideas of that, submit a show. That would be a good one to figure out. Okay, it is now 7 o'clock in the evening. There is no chance whatsoever that I will be able to go out and finish the job that I was doing in the garden. Yes. So there you go.
That worked out really well then.
Yeah. This whole Linux and Laws thing was just a way to rile the community, so I would be plenty of feedback, so I'd be stuck in here and get out of work.
I still have time in my day to go do the grass, unfortunately.
Yeah. Okay, folks, tune in tomorrow for another exciting episode of Hacker.
Public.
No, from the top. Yeah. I go Hacker, Dave goes Public, and then you go Radio. Ready?
Right.
Tune in tomorrow. Actually, no, that won't work. I go Tune in tomorrow, Dave goes Hacker, you go Public, and we all go Radio. How about that? Tune in tomorrow for another exciting episode of
Hacker
Public
Radio! And anybody who has survived to the end of this, please add a comment in the episode feed. There's no way anybody's listened to the end.
Probably true.
Have been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. Today's show was contributed by a HPR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hosting for HPR has been kindly provided by anhonesthost.com, the Internet Archive, and rsync.net. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution 4.0 International License.